This is All Things Considered on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Defense Industry Executive Republican Rich Ashew is running for Congress in New Hampshire's 1st District. He's hoping to unseat incumbent Republican Frank Ginta. In recent interviews and debates, he's characterized himself as a political outsider, a new face, someone who could succeed where the incumbent has failed. Rich Ashew joins me now to discuss his ideas for getting things done. Welcome.
Peter, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Let's start by talking about the opioid crisis. More than 400 overdose deaths in New Hampshire last year. That number may exceed 500 this year. What specifically would you do, if elected, to address this problem?
Well, what I would do is treat it like the crisis we all say it is. Now, when you have a crisis, it means you need to take emergency measures. We see this all the time in government. In New Hampshire, you know, you might have a snowstorm that's devastating. More recently, we've had this drought. And in each case, the governor or some leader will call for emergency measures that allows resources to get put on the problem right away. Well, we don't have that in New Hampshire right now. What we have is a number of proposals, many of them well-meaning, working through a process, some in Washington, some in the state, and yet we haven't done the thing I would do, which is cut through the red tape so that we can put the resources that are in the system now on the problem. And the hope is that that will make the progress we need in prevention, in treatment, certainly with law enforcement, you know, multifaceted approach. But we don't have that now. You talk to anybody who's providing treatment, let's say, and they will tell you about the thicket of red tape that exists between them and existing resources. So let's start there and try to solve the problem from the beginning.
Can you give an example of a specific kind of red tape that you'd like to cut through?
Yeah, the specific kind of red tape is, you know, look, agencies, and I'm going to talk at the state level, even I'm running for Congress, but this is a multifaceted problem. But at the state level, you've got multiple agencies that claim jurisdiction over many of these problems. And as you might expect in any complicated human enterprise, those jurisdictions get protected. And while they all believe they're serving the public, the fact is that they need to do something differently because this is a different problem. And, you know, it was not long ago, and I hate to be an expert on something that is so tragic as this opioid crisis, but I've had to do that as a candidate. And Hope on Haven Hill in Rochester, you know, they are still waiting for the resources that exist at the state level through these agencies, but we haven't cut through that red tape.
Red tape on the state level, but how would you address that as a congressman?
Well, and you know, certainly there are resources to be brought to bear at the federal level
as
well. Well, always money. I mean, that's certainly what the federal government looks for, but or what people look to the federal government for. But in particular, as a member of Congress, and this can be a red tape issue, but I happen to believe it is more of a focus issue. We need to attack the supply chain on the law enforcement side for the opioid crisis. You know, if you talk to law enforcement in New Hampshire, they will generally see the threat as being, you know, the Merrimack Valley, Lawrence, something like that, because that's you know, the kind of battle line for them. But the fact of the matter is, you know, these drugs are being produced and transported off, you know, along many state lines and, quite frankly, international borders. That's squarely in the role of Congress to deal with, and I don't believe we've been paying enough attention there. So that would certainly be one of my priorities as a member of Congress.
Border security as a means of stopping the flow of drugs into New Hampshire.
So, well, border security is one of it, but fentanyl, right, is really the drug that's killing so many people right now. And the components for fentanyl actually originate in China. I don't think we've contemplated that. Look, it's a crisis. So we need to take extraordinary measures. That includes putting this on the agenda of the nations that are responsible for transporting these drugs.
Mm-hmm. Your opponent in this primary race, Frank Ginta, has co-sponsored CARA legislation, which did provide some funding. Is that effective?
It has authorized funding.
It has authorized funding.
Not a single dollar has shown up. And I'm not being critical, but I think we need to be honest. That is authorizing legislation, which may do some good, but has had no effect yet. In the meantime, people are dying. This is why I'm calling for action now that isn't reliant on legislation.
Mm-hmm. You've spoken in other interviews and in debates about the national debt, which is growing. What would you do about the national debt?
Well, we need to balance our budget. It, you know, seems like common sense to most of us who in our daily lives, in our businesses, municipalities, the state of New Hampshire, all balance our budgets. Yet we can't seem to get this right at the federal level. Nearly 20 years, and we haven't had a balanced budget. So what does that mean? Is it just because I don't like unbalanced budget? No, it means because we're not planning well as a nation. Every unexpected cost that comes up, one could argue the opioid crisis, Zika funding, national security issues, these all become traumatic on us because we haven't done appropriate budget planning to deal with them. That is why we keep ending up, you know, exceeding our revenues. We're addicted to deficit spending and we can't seem to get agreement. Now, I come from a tradition where balanced budgets are not only important, but that's how you survive. I'm out of the private sector, where if you don't have your fiscal house in order, you don't exist.
Referring to your business experience.
Absolutely. But even before my business experience, I had the honor to work for a great New Hampshire senator named Warren Rudman, who was known back then as a deficit fighter, as a crusader on responsible budgeting. At that time, we had $3 trillion of debt as a nation, which was about 30% of our GDP. Now the debt has exploded to $19 trillion, 70%+ of our GDP. The urgency to deal with this issue was greater then when the problem was a fraction of what it is today. That's what needs to change. I'm trying to draw attention to that as a candidate. I would also point out my opponent, who has sat on the Budget Committee and sits there now, has offered no solutions on this, and he's not alone. We need Congress to step up and do their job and balance this budget.
Although, speaking of the deficit, in the past few years, since the recession began, it's, of course, the deficit ballooned in 2009, but it has been steadily shrinking, with the exception of this year when it went up slightly.
The deficit went down because of what I consider to be disastrous across-the-board spending cuts. No thought was given. The sequester, I mean, I don't want to get too wonky, but the sequester was allowed to take effect because politicians couldn't find agreement. That sequester is not the way to balance a budget because it indiscriminately cuts a fixed percentage across the board. That hurt New Hampshire very hard. It hit our defense industry, it put the shipyard at risk, and it hit a number of domestic spending programs on which we rely. So sure, the deficit went down in a temporary way. It's going up, and it will continue going up until we get it into balance.
It doesn't seem like 8 years is a temporary thing. It seems like it's an actual trend.
The deficit going down?
Yes.
It is not a trend. It is absolutely not a trend.
Though it has been since 2009.
The deficit is trending upward. And again, let's look at how we got there. It was through across-the-board spending cuts. That's not budgeting. That's just meat axe cutting. And you know, why have a Congress? Why have a budget committee if they're not going to do their job?
Mm-hmm. Would you support tax increases to help balance the budget?
I don't believe we need them. In fact, I think we need tax reform, though. Now, there are ways to grow your tax revenue without necessarily raising tax rates. In fact, I think the opposite is true. I support a much simpler tax system, both on the corporate and the personal side, because I believe too much of the American economy goes into tax compliance rather than generating revenue. We have an economy right now that's struggling. It should be surging. The improvements in the economy have largely occurred because of the intrepid nature of the American worker, American innovators, and businesses, not because government has gotten out of the way, incentivized growth, reduced taxes, done the things that would unleash the economy. Unleashing the economy is going to be the best medicine for getting our budget into balance.
Congress has not been as productive as many voters have wanted it to be over the past few years. What would you, as a representative of New Hampshire, do to not just introduce legislation, but make sure that it actually gets a vote and gets passed?
Well, that is an important distinction. Thousands of bills are introduced. Thousands of votes occur. Votes do not equal results. I come out of a tradition of progress, of results. Again, business community, where if you don't have results, you don't achieve anything. I am also one who believes that if you agree on the goal, it doesn't matter who's opposite you. You can figure out how to do it. You know, in the private sector, we have fierce competition. Yet, you know, I'm in a business where we're trying to, you know, protect our warfighters. And if your competition and you agree that that's the goal, then you'll find a way to do it. And sometimes you team with them. Sometimes you compete with them. Congress needs to behave the same way. Let's agree that balancing the budget is a laudable goal. Let's agree that border security is laudable. Let's agree that solving the opioid crisis is laudable. Those are all things that I think everybody can agree on. Yet politicians to this day, and by the way, I think voters are complicit in rewarding this behavior, have been more about the fight and less about the result. And I believe this election really needs to change that dynamic.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that you would be more than willing to work with Democrats who share a common goal with you.
Oh, absolutely. Party loyalty has its place. I'm a lifelong Republican, a conservative, but I also believe that standing clearly on those principles makes it easier to work with me. If you know where I stand, then you can find where the common ground is, and I believe that's true on the other side. As long as there's trust and integrity built into that system, you can absolutely agree. Look, we've had these problems before, and we've solved them. We've had, houses of Congress that differ in party from the president, and yet we seem to be able to solve the nation's problems, but we're not now. So I believe you need to change the people.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about veterans' issues for a moment, and veterans' choice in particular, which has been very hard in some areas of the country to implement properly. Here in New Hampshire, it's especially important, of course, because we don't have a full-service VA medical center here. Mm-hmm. There is one in White River Junction, but it's not in New Hampshire. What would you do to fix the Veterans Choice Program?
Well, the Veterans Choice Program, and for folks who aren't aware, that was created as a Band-Aid for the existing problems in the veterans medical system. Long lines, veterans having to wait far too long, not getting the quality of care that they need, not getting it in time. And so Veterans Choice was created to say, well, when the regular system goes awry, Veterans Choice will be there for them. My view is Veterans Choice should be the standard. We need to do a better job of taking the capability that exists wherever it exists, which could be the private sector, and marrying that to the needs of our veterans. I come at this from a personal way. I'm involved in a number of charities, Veterans Count, Liberty House, that try to serve veterans where government fails. Those charities should not need to exist. They do because the veterans bureaucracy isn't doing the job. Now, one of the other things that I do is I've been on the board. I'm not now because I'm running, but on the board of Catholic Medical Center, which, as the crow flies, is what, maybe 3/4 of a mile from the VA Medical Center in Manchester. Why would we build a new competing medical center when Catholic Medical Center would like nothing better than to serve our veterans? I'm sure the same is true of the Elliott and Dartmouth and every other great hospital in New Hampshire. Right now, the system does not incentivize that behavior. In fact, it disincentivizes it. And it's only when a veteran has gone through some sort of a crisis of delay that they get to use a Veterans Choice card to get there. I think we should turn that on its head.
Or if they live far from a VA medical center that offers the treatment that they need. And what you mentioned there, one of the key things was the bureaucracy,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
The VA bureaucracy, which has been blamed for numerous things, including delaying payments to civilian providers who are participating in the mm-hmm. Choice program. Mm-hmm. So let's address that bureaucracy thing specifically. How would you reform the VA bureaucracy?
Well, we need to turn things on its head in this case as well, because the fact is, there are many, many great people at the working levels in the VA, and I don't want to, send the message at all that people aren't doing a great job. And there are many positive stories that we don't get to hear about on the campaign trail. But at the top in the VA, and we've seen this is through several leadership changes, we've seen a defensive crouch taken by senior bureaucrats when you want to change the nature of the system. If the question were, what is best for our veterans, you would get a very different system than we have today. And until we truly have that cultural change at the top, we'd be nibbling around the edges. It's a lot for a Congress to take on, but we can't keep responding to the symptoms. We need to get to the root cause. And the root cause right now is a veteran system, a bureaucracy that exists mostly for itself and not for the veterans. So I would absolutely expand Veterans Choice so that it is, you could start this on a state-by-state basis, so that it is the default program rather than the emergency measure. I think having veterans being able to go wherever they'll get the best quality of care with the shortest wait is the right approach. Our veterans deserve no less.
Mm-hmm. Your opponent, Congressman Frank Ginta, has introduced legislation that challenges some of the bonuses that the higher-ups at the VA have received in recent years. Is that legislation that you think is a good idea, a good approach to that kind of problem?
Well, I definitely believe, as you've heard me say, that results should matter. And when the government rewards results that are the wrong results, sure, of course, that's a problem. But I do think we need to go further than that. The problem is not that they got bonuses, is that their job description is completely wrong. Their job description does not focus on the very simple thing that I mentioned, which is how can we get the best care with the shortest wait to our veterans? That does not seem to be the approach.
Let's talk about immigration. There are lots of people in this country here illegally, some from crossing the borders, many from overstaying visas. How should we approach the issue of people who are here illegally?
We need to prioritize. There are differences in the people who are here illegally, and we need to prioritize so that the system is mainly focused in the first place on serious criminals, serious lawbreakers. In particular, we just talked about the opioid crisis, so that's an area of focus. What we can't do, though, is have any sort of amnesty system. And the reason for that is in 1986, we had immigration reform, and that deal was struck with the promise of exchanging amnesty for the illegal aliens in the country at the time for border security. Well, they front-loaded the amnesty and never got around to the border security. So we can't make the same mistake again because it only exacerbates the problem. So if we deal with border security up front, and our borders are porous, and there are many things we can do that we haven't done. The next step is to make sure that we are not looking at the 11 to 14 million who are here illegally as one monolithic group. That wouldn't make any sense. It wouldn't be compassionate. I believe at the end of the day, we are a compassionate country. Finally, though, we also need to address our legal immigration system. For many people who want to enjoy the blessings of this country, the American dream is a nightmare. Trying to do it the legal way is also extraordinarily bureaucratic and strenuous and shouldn't be.
And costly.
And costly and rarely discriminates between, we have nations, Canada, England, Australia, that are friendly nations. And yet we simply don't reward, the good efforts that people put in to becoming an American citizen. And we need to do that.
So two issues you mentioned there. One is border security. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump says he wants to build a wall and have Mexico pay for it. Is that something that you would agree with?
So when I hear wall, I respond with system. It is simply, the border that we have now, it's not unlike national security. National security, the approach is take the best people, train them, equip them properly, and then give them a very clear mission. We need to do the same on the border. We're not doing that now. Our border agents are under siege. Part of that is definitely physical security. And I understand there's a certain simplicity to saying wall, but it's not simply physical security. It's technology. It's training. Absolutely, our physical assets need to be improved. But there's so many more assets that can be brought to the table. If it were a simple answer, it would have been done by now. Mm-hmm. And there's no question that there is a cost to doing these things, but there's also a savings to doing these things. What we need is the focus. The administration did attempt something called the Secure Border Initiative. I was aware of it because as part of industry, we were looking to try to support the government on this. It failed. It's a great name and the right idea, but it failed. And we can't give up on border security. We have to go back and try this again.
So just let me be clear on what you're saying. Mm. It seems like whereas Donald Trump is preferring a literal physical wall, you are preferring a metaphorical wall that is actually a system. Okay.
Exactly.
As far as deportations, it seems like you are drawing a line between different groups of illegal immigrants who are here. Tell me where that line is. Who would be on the side of that line that would require immediate deportation?
Well, anybody who's a threat to this nation or is in question of posing a threat. If there's a question, then immediate deportation. Deportation needs to be on the table for anybody who's here illegally. Otherwise, we're creating an incentive that we simply cannot have. That doesn't mean we're not going to adjudicate or an otherwise insert, a human consideration. I believe our system ought to be capable of contemplating those nuances. But we can't contemplate those nuances until we take that first step, which is, again, border security, and then ensuring that people know there is no incentive to illegally enter the country.
Mm-hmm. On Social Security, you said in a debate on NH1 that it needs to be modernized. Mm. What does that mean, modernized?
It means making the system appropriate for the people it's trying to serve. The current system we have now was appropriate for the people it was serving 80 years ago. We have a very different workforce. People, human beings, are very different in so many ways. Let's keep in mind, the system at its base is a pay-as-you-go system. Current workers pay for current beneficiaries. Well, at the time, we had upwards of 20 workers per beneficiary. That does not exist anymore. Right now, we've got 3 workers for every beneficiary. So we do need to modernize the system. That is fundamentally unsound. But the first thing we need to reassure people is any modernization would occur to people who are not anywhere near the system now. Current beneficiaries, we have a contract with them, we need to keep it. Anybody who's nearing being a beneficiary on Social Security needs that assurance as well. But now we live in an age where people, you know, want to work more, change jobs a lot, want to take control over their own money. We're seeing, you know, these incredible tools over personal financial investment and awareness. Those are things that need to be accommodated in this system. If we leave the system as it is, you're going to get solutions that we hear frequently, like raise the retirement age, you know, means testing, things like that. To me, those are the wrong answers. We need to change the system in a way that accommodates the people who are going to be using it.
So to dig into that word, more appropriate for today's workforce, which, as you mentioned, does shift jobs from time to time. What would be more appropriate? You mentioned that there were alternative vehicles. I'm not sure if you used the word investment, but are you talking about some sort of public-private partnership, a slight privatization of Social Security as a way of making it more appropriate for the future?
Yeah, one. I don't like the word privatization because that would suggest that the government doesn't have a role in providing this particular safety net. It does. I think government needs to continue owning the responsibility of caring for older Americans who are not able to afford it themselves. But yeah, I believe there are elements of this that can include a private investment. And again, not forced on people. I would envision a system that would have two choices. One is a basic safety net that's not unlike what we have now, but another version of that system that people can choose that rewards behaviors that will ultimately not only help the individual, but also make the system more sound. So if you want to work longer, I think there should be a benefit to that. Right now, there isn't. If you want to take the money that you're investing for Social Security and augment it with your own savings or perhaps move it around in ways that you think would benefit you, I think you should be entitled to do that. And that should be rewarded as well, because that's going to take pressure off the basic safety net. And again, I think grow the wealth of not only the beneficiary, but the program.
On the Affordable Care Act, you've said that there's been way too much energy spent on trying to repeal it. You say you'd rather reform it. How?
Well, don't get me wrong. We do need to repeal it. But I think that reforming healthcare costs is the way to get Obamacare repealed. Congress has voted 50-plus times to repeal Obamacare. It's not working.
Are you saying you'd rather have the reform in place before you repeal?
No, I would rather speak to Americans about what we are going to do to reassure them about the cost of health care. The problem with Obamacare from the very beginning was that it didn't deal with the cost of health care. It just dealt with insurance. We too often interchange insurance and cost. Both are important, but you need to talk about them separately. And Obamacare didn't really go anywhere near the problems that caused the cost of health care to explode in this nation. Again, coming at this from somebody who's been involved with a provider of healthcare, Catholic Medical Center in Manchester, it is impossible to try to meet the mission in a costly way with Obamacare in place. So it absolutely needs to go, but we do need to reassure Americans about what we're going to do for them. My view is this is one of the most personal areas that you can have in public policy, your own health care, your family's health care. And yet most Americans feel powerless over their choices, over the cost of things. It's very hard to figure out what things cost in health care. If you started with that, just transparency, then you're now empowered to make choices that you didn't know you have. We don't incentivize that in our current system. We need to.
Incentives for choice.
Incentives for choice, but transparency. Mm-hmm. You don't have choice if you don't have the transparency first. There's a great company in Portsmouth that has an app that allows you to cost compare specific procedures. Well, the reason why this is a fairly bold startup app is because our basic system keeps costs opaque. Insurance companies keep costs opaque. Americans feel that what they pay for insurance is what they're actually paying for the cost of a procedure. We need to break that down.
So what I'm hearing you say is that you would try to bring costs down, and correct me if I'm wrong, you would try to bring costs down by making hospitals make public what they charge for specific procedures so that healthcare users would be able to choose. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I believe that kind of transparency is fundamental to patient freedom. And we do see pockets of this happening. But again, the overall system, and in particular Obamacare, does not incentivize that. They incentivize opacity, and that's something that's going to change for everyone to bring the cost of healthcare down.
And that seems like one of the things that, I mean, I can hear Republicans say now, like, this is a government intrusion on private businesses, hospitals. You're making us do more work. Is that something that you think other Republicans would go for?
I think that, already hospitals are one of the most regulated industries ever. You know, what hospitals need is stability. They need to understand where the revenues are going to come from. And I will tell you that in the past 5 years, they have been whipsawed around on government regulations. And I think that anything that allows them to better serve their customers is something they'd be in favor of.
Rich Ashew, thank you very much for coming in and speaking about your ideas.
Peter, it was great to be here. Thank you for the thoughtful questions.
That's Rich Ashew. He's a Republican running to represent New Hampshire's 1st District in Congress. Tomorrow on All Things Considered, I'll speak with his opponent, incumbent Republican Representative Frank Ginta. The state's primary election is Tuesday, September 13th.